Hello, this is Scott Bessenecker. You're listening to Voices from the Center, episode number 6. This episode, we're going to be talking about cruise ships. In 1972, I turned 9 years old on the second day of a voyage to Australia. My family was immigrating there, and it was an economical and exciting way to change countries. We were aboard the SS Canberra for like 3 weeks, and it was a crazy experience for a nine-year-old, incredibly stimulating. One of the interesting characters, a man of mystery that was on board, was Mr. Marquis. He was the guy who serviced our stateroom. He was from Indonesia. He was just this curious figure. And I've thought about Mr. Marquis in the last couple weeks as I've been looking into the cruise ship industry, though we were on a vessel that was taking folk mainly to immigrate from North America to Australia. The cruise ship industry really comes out of that passenger liner experience in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So in the 80s, a show called The Love Boat began to popularize this idea of cruise as a way for relatively middle-class folk to relax, meet other people. And sometime in the 90s, it started to become super affordable for thousands and thousands of middle-class people to take vacations. Today, the cruise ship industry is a $100 billion a year business with four lines that make up 98% of the industry. Carnival, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian, and Disney dominate the cruise ship industry. They've got all their little subsidiaries. So they may not all go by those names, but all the money flows into these four large super corporations. Today, you go online, you can find a seven-night cruise for $379. That's like a little over 50 bucks a night. You can't stay in most hotels that cheaply. How in the world are they able to house someone, feed someone, entertain someone for so little? Well, the reason it's so affordable is because of the labor laws that cruise ships can skirt around. These are mostly American-owned, but incorporated in countries where labor and environmental laws are very lax, and they don't have to pay U.S. taxes. So Royal Caribbean, for instance, is headquartered in Miami, but it is incorporated in Liberia. They don't even offer cruises or getaways anywhere in Africa. In fact, the only African getaway they offer is the getaway that they get from taxes and fair labor practices. So I interviewed Jessa. Jessa is a person I met through a friend who organized demonstrations around what sometimes called sweatships. And so my friend Craig would bring a group of folk out to Vancouver, where actually my ship, the SS Canberra, stopped on its way to Australia, and make a stink about the labor practices that go on below deck. So Jessa worked as part of a cast of performers and began building friendships below deck with the crew who don't get to interact much with passengers, and was plunged into another world of 10 to 12-hour or more days of labor, 7 days a week, for an entire 10-month contract, no vacation, no breaks, extremely low wages, or having to pay for a bunch of things like an indentured servant. And these lower deck crew members, some of whom, particularly in the laundry section, hadn't seen the outdoors in months. So take a listen to Jessa's experience as she uncovered and found the life of the crew that are not performers, that aren't above deck and working with the passengers, and what life was like for some of her friends. Jessa, where are you at?
I am in Toledo, Washington at the moment.
And you're a performing artist?
I am. I write music now. Been focusing on that for a little while, and also living in a community that we're experimenting with permaculture and sustainable living practices. So a lot of farming, that sort of thing lately.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was glad that Craig connected us. How did you get in touch with Craig?
That was actually on my second contract when I began kind of looking into the issues on the ship. I didn't find a whole lot of information regarding the labor laws or anything about the industry, really. But I did find an article about the Pirates for Justice in Vancouver. So I discovered the community through their work that they were doing. I guess they dressed up like pirates and went down to the docks to educate people on the cruise industry. So I contacted them and just shared what I was witnessing on board. And so that's how we began working together. Yeah.
Well, it'd be great to hear some of your story and experiences just to give people a perspective on what's going on. And then we can talk right. about some of the specific issues or people and mm-hmm. hear what you might recommend for folk that yeah. this feels like they want to be involved.
Right. All right. So I guess I'll start by saying that it's difficult. Really, I wouldn't have known what was going on unless you start asking questions. They keep everybody very segregated. If you were a Westerner, you lived on A deck, you ate with the passengers. You really didn't mingle with other staff members, and all the Indonesians lived in one area. All of the Filipinos lived in a different area. So they try to keep us very separated. And we eat in different places. And so I honestly didn't realize what their schedule was like until I joined the Christian Fellowship on board, which was, me and about 12 other Indonesian men. And it was during one of our meetings that my friend Ray asked for us all to pray for him. It was his first contract, and he had mentioned that he thought that surely his day off must be coming soon. And then he realized that he was not going to get a day off, and it was overwhelming him, and he was already 2 months into his contract and had about 8 months left to go. And that really struck me. I had no idea that they were working every day for roughly 12 to 14 hours a day. And he also did not realize that this was the schedule that he was getting himself into. So that seemed to be the story that I hear from most folks, is that, you know, they're promised to see the world and to save a lot of money. They don't realize the amount of money they're going to spend even getting on the ship. The agencies that hire them, I believe it's SBI in Indonesia, most of my friends ended up paying at least $1,000 in training fees. They had to pay for their medical exams. So just to even get to the ship, they're investing a lot. And then, you know, on a salary that starts at about $200 a month, they're working for quite a while before they're actually seeing anything.
And yeah. Jessa, tell me about how you got connected with the cruise ship and how that mm-hmm. went. And
yeah.
Maybe the line that you worked for.
Okay. Or... Yeah. So I worked for Holland America Line. I was working at a theme park in Sandusky, Ohio, Cedar Point. And the cruise lines like to audition folks that work kind of in those environments because the shows are very similar. So I honestly didn't plan on working on a ship. I just went to the audition and they offered me the job, and it sounded like an interesting experience to me. Yeah, my first contract was actually after my sophomore year of college. I took a year of absence or a leave of absence, and then, yeah, went to work on the ship for that year. Yeah, the first couple months, I mean, they were teaching us about a show a week, and you just have to kind of retain that information. And they, you know, every morning for the next rehearsal, they ask us to show them what we learned the day before. So you kind of have, that's how they weed out people, and they do fire people in the beginning if they can't retain it quick enough.
And they were all North Americans?
Yes. Yep. Everyone, Canadian or Americans. Yep. Yeah, I believe that some of the other lines, there's an occasional Australian, but
uh-huh. yeah. All Westerners. So you guys are hanging out together, training together, performing together.
Right.
And you say that a lot of the Americans don't have much opportunity to hang out with or be in relationship with the other nationalities on board. Is that true of your performance mates?
Yeah, it is true. At least on Holland America ships, even the the officers' bar is what they called it. Lots of folks would hang out there after the show, but only those with officer status are allowed in there. So, I mean, it was basically the officers of the ship and then anyone else that they wanted to kind of give officer status to, which looked like, you know, folks working in the spa, and then the cast and the musicians. So we weren't technically officers, but we were granted officer status. Seemed a little unfair. And then the other folks didn't have a place to really unwind for themselves. So
you started to get to know mainly Indonesian guys in a Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us the story of one of them, their background, why they signed up for working on the cruise, what kind of work they did, that sort of thing.
Yeah, most of my friends worked in the housekeeping department. Actually, I'll tell you the story of Ika. She's a housekeeping general personal assistant is what her title was. And she had gone through the entire process. She was previously working in a Nike factory in Indonesia. She lived in Jakarta. And her experience was that she was supporting her family back home. Her father was unable to work due to he was injured. Her mother was a seamstress. And so Ika decided to go work on the ship to help support her brother so that he could go to school. And she opted not to. So she was at the time, she was 20 years old and went through the training and all of that. And she told me that she spent about $1,000 just to get to the ship. And her experience was that she wasn't actually making enough to send home. So she began helping other cabin stewards with their duties as well so that she could make a few extra bucks here and there to send home. Her days were pretty packed. And even during her off time, I often find her outside my cabin with a bag of towels that she had to fold on her break. So I'd help her roll the towels up and that sort of thing. And then she's actually Muslim. So during Ramadan, they didn't change the schedule for the meals for folks either. So, and she was a very devout Muslim and she could not eat before the sun went down. So she would ask me to kind of bring back food from the Lido, from the passenger area for her after hours.
And was that allowed or were you kind of needing to do it under the table?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was the case with a lot of folks. They would have to pay. I mean, so the Filipino staff, they worked in the kitchens. And so you'd have the Indonesian housekeepers paying them to set aside food for them. So there was this whole underground system of needing to just get fed. So folks that were devout Muslims were paying their Filipino friends to hold some food aside for them and bring it back after their day. So it was just this whole...
And how long was her contract for?
Her contract was 10 months. So after that 10-month period, she went back home and had to wait for another contract to open up. It's usually a few months before they get signed to another contract. And the reason why I've looked into that, they're hired for specific contracts rather than full-time employees, is because the company doesn't have to pay for their vacation. So they just hire folks for one contract. They go home, they wait for a couple months, and then if they're lucky enough, they get back on the ship. And most people do consecutive contracts just to kind of pay off, you know, the initial fees of even getting a job on board. So
you say the training to come on board, they pay out of pocket something like $1,000?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I have Ika's, she said that it was $250 a month for training. She had to pay $600 for her medical exam, even for, and she also said that folks can kind of take the fast track to get on the ship. So you can bypass the English exam by bribing the agency as well. So a lot of people will try to get hired quicker and we'll kind of skip these steps that the agency makes them go through. And it's actually, Holland America states that they do not hire from agencies that accept bribes, but it's very evident that they do and that they're aware of it, that it is happening. But
And How many employees would you guess were working housekeeping or food service?
Let's see here. We had, I'd say about 750 or so on our ship. And there are 14 ships in the fleet for housekeeping. Yeah, you know, it might even be more than that. And our ship was a smaller class ship. So then the Vistas, it's a couple thousand per ship.
Oh, a couple thousand. Mostly Southeast Asian workers.
Yes. Filipino, Indonesians, Indians. I know other lines are a little different, but that tends to be in Holland America tends to hire from Indonesia primarily. So I'm not certain about the other lines, but.
And Holland America is a Dutch company. They don't have any American affiliate.
It's an American owned company, but they are the ship is registered in Holland. So there's tends to be a lot of Dutch officers on board, but
the owners
are,
and investors are American,
right? Exactly.
But registered in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
That tends to be and I know that Royal Caribbean registers their ships in Bahamas or Panama. I guess they call it the flag of convenience, and so the labor laws are less intense in those areas, and they are evading U.S. taxation, so they don't have to register their ships in the U.S. They don't have to pay taxes. And if anything happens on board, I mean, people did jump ship, go missing, what have you, but nothing was ever investigated. It's kind of a gray area as to who, what jurisdiction that falls under and who's going to come on board. And it's rare that you're going to get, I don't know, it didn't seem like the labor laws in Panama were, at least on our ship, they weren't investigating anything happening. So
yeah, that's crazy, because you think of European labor laws as being very progressive, like a year maternity leave and
three months
vacation for everybody. But American owners are registering in a variety of countries because there's not maybe the same scrutiny with labor when it's considered international waters or it's an American-owned company, so they don't have to abide by. Yeah, it's just weird to think that there's this loophole in labor law when something is on international waters owned by Americans but registered in another country.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
What is it that people can do? Let's take the average cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who cares about this, but who also loves going on cruises. What are the sorts of questions they ask? Are there cruise lines that are much, much better, very attentive? Has Holland America changed their policy since you were aboard?
No, I've kept in touch with some folks that are still working. The main thing that I hear, because I would ask crew members that I was speaking with, if they, you know, what would they recommend? What would they like to see happen on board? Their main issue really is around the hours that they're working. I know that Royal Caribbean, I think they've changed their policy to 8-hour workdays, which seems a lot healthier to me. And so even if that, you know, if nothing else, if folks had a shorter day, so they'd have a little bit more of a break to unwind. Because even the ILO standards are that you can't work more than 11 hours. And that was something else that, you know, that definitely wasn't abided by. People were clocking in saying that they ended at 9 o'clock, but it was midnight, you know, because the work just had to get done. And there was no overtime pay. So, and actually a friend of mine, Hamdam, he would often try to actually enter the hours that he did work, and he was called to the hotel manager and scolded for doing so and said, you know, well, if you can't get the work done within these hours, then maybe you shouldn't be here. And yeah, basically they're just forced to kind of go with it. And they're often told, well, if you don't like it, you can leave. So, you know, in the middle of nowhere, and pay for your own plane ticket and your replacement's plane ticket out here. So they're kind of they're just stuck in the situation.
So it's a little bit like because you're on a ship, maybe being held against your will if you know you can't afford to get back or I don't know if they hold your passport.
But, they do. Yeah.
Okay. So they've got your passport captive.
Exactly.
So mainly it's like, hey, we don't mind working for a pittance. Actually, this is a decent wage for my life at this point. Mm-hmm. Hours per day and perhaps days off are the sorts of things that they feel the most egregious. Any of their activities or the things that they were doing that you felt like, oh, gosh, this doesn't seem like a really great job or ways that they were being treated on board that you also feel like you may be willing to tolerate this, but it ought not to be tolerated. So anything that you saw that might help us see the kinds of jobs and the kinds of employer or supervisor-supervisee relationship?
A good friend of mine worked in the laundry department, and that was on C-deck, way below, you know, any sunlight, and they actually had a rule that you could not come into passenger areas unless your work permitted that, which only applied to those with the more menial tasks. I mean, those with officer status could just kind of go wherever they wanted on the ship, do whatever they wanted. But my friend Mohammed was not, he actually did not see sunlight for a few months. Because of where his job was located, and he was not permitted to go to passenger areas, which started at sea level. So unless he had enough of a break to get off the ship, which he often didn't, he spent that time sleeping or, you know, eating. He spent most of his time under the water. So that sort of thing, I think there should be, you know, an area for crew members to always have access to getting outside. Yeah, and better healthcare. Another friend was literally going blind and brought that to the attention of the crew doctor. And they told him that they didn't see anything wrong. And it wasn't until he opened up to a passenger who happened to be a doctor explaining his situation. And that passenger pushed for him to get medical attention, and they actually discovered a tumor. So, yeah.
Wow. They needed a passenger to advocate.
Exactly. And so, he was willing to sue the company, so they listened up.
So maybe one bit of advice to those who go on cruises is develop relationships with your food service and housekeeping staff.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Hear their stories, and because, you know, that passenger ultimately ended up saving this man's life, so they have a lot of pull. The company will do whatever the passenger wants, so, you know, if they can make suggestions, if they can help in any way, that does go a long way.
And you mentioned the laundry service folk were on deck three, sort of, and not allowed to be above any level where they're passengers. Give us a sense of the layout of your ship.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's this sort of underbelly, literal underbelly of slave laborers that nobody sees.
Nobody sees, exactly. So you've got C deck, which is the laundry, the engine room, all of that. B deck is where the Indonesians, Filipinos, the housekeeping, bar staff, they live on B deck. A deck is then basically all of the Westerners live on A deck. And it also has the crew mess. And let's see.
And the is the crew mess open to C and B deck folk as well?
The crew mess is only for them. For folks who live on A deck, they are required to eat in the Lido with the passengers. So we actually were not allowed to eat in the crew mess.
Uh-huh. So the crew mess is for A, B and C folk.
Right.
A deck folk, mostly Westerners.
Yeah.
Spend time schmoozing with the passengers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And besides performing crew, what other things did Westerners do aboard ship?
They worked in the casino, the spa, officers, entertainment staff. So the face of the company, you know, anywhere that a passenger would see somebody. Yeah.
And I don't imagine it's easy for passengers to find their way down to B and C decks or even A deck. Is it, I mean, could you, like, are those places locked? Or, I mean, if you were a passenger and kind of wanting to observe or report on any things that, that felt like labor violations, you wouldn't be allowed to go down into those levels.
No, no. And there, if, I mean, there were folks that during certain port days, they open up A deck if it's, if we're directly docked right there. Yeah, but they have it closed off, so you wouldn't, you know, they've got the dividers shut, and you really can't get in that area unless you know where the crew elevators are that go there. So you have to wander in somewhere,
What year was this that you performed on board?
My last contract I finished in 2012. So.
And have things changed much as you've observed?
No, no. I mean, it seems that Holland America is still very much, because I've tried to keep in touch with folks that are still on the ship. And, they said that, I know that one of my friends, he had a sibling that worked on Royal Caribbean. So that's how I know that that company apparently had changed some of their practices and were doing the 8-hour workday. But aside from that, that seems to be the only improvement that I've, you know, become aware of. So I would love to get back on board and as perhaps a guest entertainer or something of that sort, so I can kind of see where things are at now. But so far from what I can tell, it's hasn't been much improvement.
Do they offer like summer contracts? Should there be students like you, but who just have the summer and want to do a summer on board and engage with this sort of issue, but not take a year off school?
The only way that would be possible is if they were a musician. The contract lengths, mine, the last two contracts that I had were each 13 months long. They started at 8 and then we ended up extending. But the musicians tend to have shorter contracts. So I know some folks that do that with their summers. They can, make themselves available for just a few months. But any other job, I mean, the spa, the entertainment department, all of it, the contracts are usually at least 6 months long.
And so, like, what's the solution? Is it boycotting cruises? Is it going on cruises and asking questions? I suppose if passengers aren't dealing with B and C deck folk, there's a certain limit to, you ask someone, how many days a week do you work? Unless you can get a conversation with the housekeeping staff, it might be hard to find the workers who are working under poor conditions.
And it's a tricky situation because I had a lot of friends who were willing to share their stories, but asked, you know, for me not to actually use their real names. If I were to ever publish anything that they had said, they don't want to lose their jobs. They're supporting lots of folks back home. Essentially, right now on Holland America ships, there are about 12,000 Indonesians working. So if they all one day decided not to perform their duties, they could really change a lot of things. But so I honestly don't know the answer. I think it starts with asking questions and getting to know the stories of these folks on board. Yeah, I mean, ideally, if there are some small improvements that could be made within the industry, I know that would go a long way. Shorter work days and better food. That was another thing that I noticed. The crew mess, I mean, they rarely saw fresh fruits and vegetables. It was usually just, rice and meat. You know, having a better, some more options for food.
Are there any efforts to unionize ship workers?
Yeah, on certain lines, like I know Disney, they do not allow any unions on board. And from what I've seen, folks don't really want to cause any problems. They're afraid to speak out. They don't. Yeah, I'm not aware of any, at least in Holland America. So,
yeah, the conditions suck, but they have work and no way of getting back home until they complete their contract and don't want to be left in the lurch.
Exactly.
Who are the bad boys in the cruise industry that you're aware of? In terms of lines, like which yeah. lines would you urge people to avoid besides Holland America?
All of them. I don't think there are any good lines, to be honest. I mean, unless you're taking a cruise that is an American-owned cruise that hires American, you know, staff, and they might be cruising just around Hawaii or something. But any of the lines that do international cruising, they're getting away with a lot, and they are, yeah, not treating their employees very well. So I don't know. I haven't found any good lines.
And what about those who are willing to actually go into the industry and sign on? Mm-hmm. Sounds like you stumbled into this by just getting to know some of the other shipmates.
Right.
It sounds like at least for your cruise, they allowed a Bible study to let Westerners mix with others. Mm-hmm. Pathway for someone like you who wants to do a 13-month stint in order to uncover violations, and any reporting bodies that are like, here's the line you get in to report on cruise ship violations. Is there a place in the U.S. government or internationally where you can report on cruise ship violations? So any advice for folk wanting to help solve the problem?
Definitely the ILO and the ITF. They are working. I know the ITF has a campaign against the flags of convenience.
So ILL, International Labor Organization. Huh? And is that based in Switzerland, you know? Or
I actually don't know. No.
And ITF, what's that?
International Transport Federation. So they work primarily with employees on ships. And I also discovered the International Cruise Victims Organization, but that primarily deals with passengers who... it was started by a man whose daughter disappeared on a cruise line, and it was never investigated. And so I think there's a place, and they're based out of Seattle, I believe. But I was speaking with him a little bit. I mean, they're more focused on passenger safety, but there's another place to kind of connect as well.
Were there other places besides Bible studies where the crew mixed Westerners and the various enclaves?
Yeah, they occasionally had a crew party. So every few months or so, they would have a party on, you know, at the top of the ship in the crow's nest or something. So that was another opportunity for folks to hang out and get to know each other.
And presumably your rooms were serviced by housekeeping. You get to know the person who serviced your room.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And would like the same person service your room for the entire period you were there?
Yes, usually. Yeah, or it might overlap, you know, depending on when their contract started. We might have two or three different folks. But
there's enough consistency that you could get to know some of the people serving you food or servicing your room, develop a relationship. But it sounds like you'd have to have a certain amount of trust for many of the folk to share some of the concerns.
Yeah. I learned that... participating in the karaoke nights helped a lot.
And as performers, that was the thing you guys signed up for first, was the karaoke nights. Yeah.
Right.
Together. I mean, your advice is don't go on a cruise. It's cheap because for a reason.
Exactly.
Because they use slaves.
Exactly.
So go to a KOA or some other sort of, you know, find a different way to enjoy yourself. But for those who can't stop themselves, what do they avoid, and who are the bad guys?
Carnival, Princess, Disney,
all the big names.
And from what I've learned is that there really are only a few companies, and so like Princess falls under Carnival, Holland America it falls under Carnival. So they're all owned. Most of them are owned by Carnival, Disney, or Royal Caribbean. So even the various lines, they're all the practices are the same. You know, Norwegian Cruise Line. So, wow. Yeah.
Any other organizing that's happening around sweatship labor?
I'm not aware of any. I've reached out to anyone and everyone that, you know, tends to see what's happening. I've been working with, folks that haven't worked on the ship, but are also aware of these issues. The Carnival de Resistance is a traveling arts community that I'm a part of that is working with me on this issue. We got to present to Eastern Mennonite University and kind of share with those folks. But and this is something that I have been not as active with in the past couple years, but coming back around to seeing, you know, what folks I can partner with on this.
Communities of faith that are engaging this question?
It tends to be, those are usually the first folks that are open to hearing about this, and from my experience, that I come in contact with. So, you know, communities like Servants or...
Servants Asia's or...
Yeah, this traveling arts community.
Pirates for Justice event. So, mm-hmm. My understanding is that they would gather a group of people dressed like pirates and go to the docking locations for some of the cruise ships just to raise awareness by creating an event around where passengers are boarding or disembarking.
Exactly.
Have you seen that happen in other places? Or?
No, I haven't.
So there's room to do that kind of organizing.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Get passengers aware. Well, I appreciate, again, your work, your thoughtfulness in sharing some of this, and hope to help in a little bit raise awareness with a handful more people.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah. Thanks, Jessa.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really talked about the environmental challenges and hazards that cruise ships enjoy, dumping all sorts of sewage as they go and spitting out twice as much in the way of emissions per capita as airplanes do. So the pollution issue is another whole topic to dive into. But with regard to labor practices, I hope you'll think twice about cruising, at least ask some questions and get to know people on board, particularly those who are in the service sector of the cruise ship industry. Make it a point to report any violations, not that it will necessarily do much good. Royal Caribbean was fined £600,000 recently when it pulled into Rotterdam and underwent a surprise labor inspection, found in violation of a number of the labor laws in the Netherlands, and it can easily afford these sorts of fines. What it can't afford are passengers that are demanding better practices. And I want you just to be aware that there's a reason you're paying $379 for an amazing cruise. It's because of the slave labor that exists below deck. So give some thought to how or if you should take a cruise, and speak up for those who I think are at the center of society, the center of God's kingdom, certainly, and people for whom we need to be listening and following. That's all there is for this episode of Voices from the Center. Tune in next time when I'll talk with Michelle, a young woman from the States who's chosen to live in a slum community in the developing world. Until then.